ever since Disney has bought Star Wars and Marvel, there have been questions from the fan community. What exactly is an Inhuman? How is it different than a mutant? What's the expanded universe? What language do Wookiees speak? Are Storm and Black Panther still married? The answer to all these questions and much more on WDWNT On The Air's new show, Nerd Alert, with your host, Joe Hogarty.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 9 of WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and joining me is Ron Deanna.
Aloha.
And Jack McCarthy.
Howdy, folks.
And Taylor Catcher.
Hello!
On today's episode, we actually have a lot of news to discuss. Lots of Star Wars news, Marvel news, and we're also going to give our impressions on two recent movies, Suicide Squad and Star Trek Beyond. But first, let's start off with Star Wars news. First bit of Star Wars news is the new Rogue One trailer premiered during the 2016 Olympics, and there was a lot of new stuff and some familiar faces, too.
It was good. I thought it was great. I mean, I think that was interesting is they when they released the Sabotage, like re-edit, someone edited and added Sabotage by Beastie Boys to that. It was better than the Sabotage trailer for Star Trek. I think because they were actually trying to sabotage something.
I was like, huh. I didn't see that yet.
Oh, someone made a fan edit and they put Sabotage behind like the music, you know, behind the trailer. And it was awesome. I was like, wow, I'm really pumped. I think I like that trailer better than the regular trailer. As much as I love Star Wars music, I was just like, man, sabotage that Death Star. Yeah, we got to get those the Empire out of there. Like, send in those people to, you know, rebel. It's cool. Be cool. Oh, and Alan Tudyk's character was finally shown. That was fun. But I would say besides that, like, I feel kind of lukewarm overall on this movie. I'm kind of like, yep, it's Star Wars. Episode 7, I was, like, on the edge of my seat every trailer and, like, crying in happiness. But I felt like this, I'm kind of like, I'll see that. I don't know what about it is not just like, I mean, Darth Vader at the end, right? Everyone's super stoked about that. But we knew that was coming. So I don't know. And it wasn't like we saw him do anything. We saw him from the back. It was kind of like the first time we saw the Doctor Strange in the Doctor Strange trailer. It was just from the back with his cape. You're like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have been cool if he turned around just so we can get a nice look at him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we're going to see him in any trailers. I think that they might keep him until we see the final movie, which would be fine with me. But I mean, we know he's going to be in it.
Yeah, I think if we get one more trailer, like all we should just see is like maybe a red lightsaber igniting.
Yeah, that'd be
like,
cool.
We don't need to see him in combat. I think that needs to be something we see in the movie is Vader being, you know, the galactic badass that he's supposed to be. And this trailer was great. I think I'm almost as excited for this as I think I was for episode 7 minus the, you know, 10 years delay between movies. You added, you know, this was the first one in 10 years. I would be just as excited, if not more, because this looks incredible. This looks like someone knows the universe well and wants to play in the sandbox rather than recreate it.
Yeah, I do agree. It does have that feel of, like, the original trilogy. I like that aspect of it. But, like, what Taylor was saying, I'm a little bit lukewarm with it, too. Especially when Alan Tudyk's character met Jyn Erso for the first time. It didn't really work for me. There's a couple of scenes in there that I'm worried about that I don't know how it's going to play. I love the battle scenes, though. Like, I've been saying from the very beginning, it reminds me of Black Hawk Down, but with Star Wars. And I want to see ground battles like that in the daytime and, you know, even some at night if we can. I mean, I'd be so happy. And, like, we're all Battlefront fans, and it reminds me of that, too. So I'm really looking forward to that. What about you, McCarthy?
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it a heck of a lot. However, I do agree with what you and Taylor are saying, but I wonder if it's probably because we may have read too much on the background of what's been going into this movie. Because after all, we've heard about first trailer or teaser, we saw that and we were all kind of excited. And then we started to hear about extensive rewrites and refilming and editing and people not being as happy about it. I think that's kind of dulled us a little bit on being excited for this, because, yeah, we're excited, but we're also a little bit more worried than we were with Episode 7.
Yeah, that's
true. Because when that came out, we were like, oh my God. You know, we didn't hear much about it beforehand, I think, in comparison to Rogue One. So I think everybody's looking at this maybe a little bit too much. Instead of waiting for the movie, we're maybe starting to... How can I describe this? We're kind of preparing ourselves for the worst when we really shouldn't be. Like I said, I think we just have to go into it with an open mind and trust it that Kathy Kennedy and company are not going to put out a bad Star Wars movie if they can prevent it. Disney spent so much money. I wouldn't be surprised if they're focus grouping the heck out of this again and, okay, let's tweak this. Let's see what we can put in. So I think it's really going to be good. The trailer, yeah, was good. I would have really liked to see a little bit more Darth Vader than the less than a second flash on the screen. I like the way it looks, too. And, Joe, it's funny you mentioned about Battlefront because, yeah, that battle on the beach looks like it could be right out of Battlefront. And I think it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do, too.
I mean, the behind-the-scenes stuff we've heard, that I don't think has me as worried. One, the reshoots, you know, there was a rumor for tone, but the trailer tone didn't change like the Suicide Squad trailer tone did between the first and the second. So, like, this seems like the tone is still there. And the whole reports that Garth Edwards isn't in the editing room, one, directors aren't always are, and the person who's running the editing room is the original screenwriter.
Hmm.
So that makes me think, like, yes, you know, we might have a couple different voices on this, but it's just a couple. It's not being run by committee.
Oh, I didn't get that sense at all from the rewrites. I mean, from everything we've heard about it prior, you know, I think it's in the hands of the small group trying to make this. But yeah, I don't think we'll see it death by committee like Amazing Spider-Man 2 or anything.
Yeah, and I agree with you guys, too. Like what Jack said, I think if Kathleen Kennedy felt that there was trouble, she'd probably push to have it delayed. Instead of putting out a crappy movie, let's delay it and work on it so that we have more time, fine-tune it, and have a better movie for maybe the summer or something like that. That they're not doing that, it's a good sign, and I think that they have faith in the movie. There's going to be enough in there that we're going to like. I'm sure there's going to be some stuff in there that we won't, too. It's best to go into this movie with low expectations, which, I like Jack said, like the reshoots might have given us that feeling. But that always helps, because it can only go up from there if you go in with low expectations, unless it's really bad. But let's keep our fingers crossed still. Let's go on to the next Star Wars news story. The Han Solo solo movie will apparently be adding Lando Calrissian to the movie.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I was not excited about a Han Solo solo movie, which is really fun to say. But I would be more excited about a Lando Calrissian solo movie that has Han Solo in it rather than the other way around. Because Lando Calrissian is awesome in every way. He's like, you know. So, I mean, we have to assume that Han's going to win the Millennium Falcon from Lando in this movie, right, at this point. Or maybe he won't have the Millennium Falcon at all, and then the second movie they do, that's when he gets the Millennium Falcon or something. But either way, I have a feeling that the pilot of the Millennium Falcon, it when seen first time in a Han Solo solo movie, will be Lando Calrissian. And the rumors that Donald Glover might be Lando has me even more excited, because that's absolutely what I want. That's great. I don't know. I'm excited about Lando.
Yeah, I kind of see it as like a buddy picture, almost like Lethal Weapon.
That'd be awesome. I would take a Star Wars Lethal Weapon movie. Lando's like getting too old for this.
I think I'm actually more excited now that he's in it than Chewbacca is in it.
Oh, me too, 100%.
What are you saying, Taylor?
Is Chewbacca in it? Like, when does Han meet Chewbacca? You know, we don't know.
I mean, the one that was always a story was, like, when Han, like, failed out of the academy or whatever and had to run, he, like, took Chewie with him as, like, a slave. That's a story I always remember. I don't know how canon that was even in the old canon, but that's what I remember being told. But, you know, who knows when that is now, so...
Oh, I mean, he was in the academy?
Yeah, supposedly he failed out of the academy for being kind of a good guy, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was that he got booted out of the academy because he Let Some Wookiees Go. Why do I remember it that way, which is what set up the whole Life Debt thing?
Yeah, there's the whole new Life Debt book I haven't read yet. Maybe that goes into it. I guess no one here's read that one yet.
Nope.
No. Is that the new sequel to
Aftermath 2, yeah.
Aftermath? Yeah, I heard it was bad. Like, I heard it wasn't very good, which is disappointing.
It's sitting on my coffee table, buried under a stack of comic books and the Potter book to finish.
I finished the Potter book. It was fun.
I'm through Act 2, and it feels more of a chore.
It's like good fan fiction, you know?
That's how it feels, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited Lando Calrissian is in it. And as Taylor said, Lando Calrissian is the coolest cat in the galaxy. I don't think Donald Glover portrays that, though.
What?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I remember Community is too much of a doofus.
But did you, have you, like, seen, like, he's, I don't know, have you seen lots of his stuff for the comedy troupe he was in before he got Community?
No, I haven't seen that.
And have you seen his rap stuff?
I really just know him from Community, that's all.
Because, like, he has a new show coming out called Atlanta, because he's Childish Gambino's, his alter ego, his rap alter ego. And so, like, he could definitely play cool. I mean, I could see him playing cool for sure.
Okay, all right. I'll trust your opinion on that, but I just haven't seen everything of him. But, you know, I'm glad Lando Calrissian would be in it. And it would be nice to see Chewbacca in it as well. You know, and like you said, a buddy film. It could be really good. Because Lando always has some sort of scheme working, and Han Solo kind of just gets sucked into things just to make a buck. So it really could be good.
Yeah, hate to break in with some breaking comic-related news, but Yvonne Craig just died.
Did she? I thought she died a few months ago.
Is this just being a reposted story?
Yeah, probably.
Let's see here.
You going for the easy segue into Kenny Baker there?
It's kind of, in a way. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure she died, because they announced that animated Batman and Robin movie with Adam West and Burt Ward, mm-hmm. and she's not in it. You know, only the survivors are in it.
Yeah,
only the survivors.
Yeah.
Oh no, this is a year ago. So somebody just posted it. I didn't notice the year.
So, Ron, do you have any idea who you'd like to see in it?
I definitely like Glover. I think Lando's not as smooth as he thinks he is. He's smooth, but you know, he really thinks he is the coolest guy in the galaxy when. You know, you watch him under fire, he does kind of duck and cover just as much as anybody else will.
Yeah, and he lost that satellite shield, too.
Yeah, he's good, but I think he and Han in a buddy cop movie, that just sounds perfect to me.
All right, moving on, and we got some sad news. Actor Kenny Baker, who's best known for playing R2-D2, passed away at the age of 81. He was beloved by fans, and he definitely was in the original trilogy, and I don't know if he was CGI'd, and he definitely was CGI'd in The Force Awakens. He might have been on set for the prequels and stuff like that, but my understanding is he just kind of moved the head back and forth, like he didn't have anything to do with the actual robotic movements of moving forward, moving backward, or anything like that as the character. But it's kind of cool to know, like, we've seen pictures of him in the R2-D2 unit with the top off, and it's amazing that, you know, he's able to fit in there. And he was kind of, even like, you know, when I was a kid, I knew what he looked like. And I always would say, well, that's R2-D2, you know, even though he wasn't a droid. I found out he was originally supposed to be Willow in the movie Willow, but he was not in good health at the time. His parents were told by doctors that he wouldn't make it to his teen years. And he really showed them, because he made it to 81. And I was going to say one thing, too. Anthony Daniels did not like him. He was a big jerk to Kenny Baker. And Kenny Baker tried again and again to give him an olive branch. And he just did not consider Kenny Baker an actor. He considered him like a footstool, and he pushed to have Kenny Baker be not be in the prequels and not be in The Force Awakens because he just didn't like him. I remember hearing a story that they were at some convention and Kenny Baker went up to him and asked him, you know, would you like to get together so that we could sign autographs for fans at the same table, and he just walked away from him. And that's the type of relationship that they had, unfortunately. He never considered him a real actor. He just considered him as, like, a stand-in, which was unfortunate. So if you ever see Anthony Daniels, don't clap for him. Especially just remember what he was like in Attack of the Clones, what kind of performance he gave in that role. But that's my beef. All right, Ron, you got anything to say?
No, I mean, like, he added a lot of personality to that character, I think. I mean, those little subtle movements in those first movies was more personality than just the beeping ever could be. And he did a lot of that. So, yeah, he did enough to make that character his. I think, you know, calling him not an actor was incredibly, you know, an unfair thing.
And he was in, I was going to say, too, he's in Time Bandits. Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, years ago.
Yeah, he was the shortest of the crew, and I always look for him, and I love that movie as a kid, too. What about you, Jack?
Well, I mean, I agree, though, that there was more than just sitting into a garbage can, no matter how nicely dressed up it was, than just turning the head. I had always heard he had worked different parts inside it, with the beeps, with the movements and stuff. And, yeah, he did his part. He gave some personality to, like I said, a little robot that's shaped like a garbage can. And let's face it, R2-D2's one of the most beloved droids in cinema. And Kenny Baker is due his credit for that. So it's unfortunate he didn't get along as well with the co-star he worked the most with, but still, it's sad to hear of his passing.
Yeah.
Everybody else gave him these great obituaries, particularly Mayhew.
Yeah, well, Peter Mayhew, who played Chewbacca, he was just an awesome guy. I mean, I think he doesn't have anything bad to say about anybody, and it's kind of nice that, you know, he did pay tribute to Kenny Baker.
Yeah, well, I remember, I mean, we saw him at Star Wars weekends down in Disney. Peter Mayhew, he just seemed like a nice guy. He took time waving to fans and just kind of a very fan-friendly. So I think he's a good guy, and it's nice to hear he had some nice words about Kenny Baker as well.
Yeah. Natalia, you got anything?
No, it's sad that he passed. And yeah, I mean, even as someone who didn't grow up, like, at the time Star Wars and stuff happened and everything, I still knew that that's the guy that played R2-D2, you know? Like, his face was very memorable to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that, I mean, that says a lot. I mean, I guess I'm definitely entrenched in it all, right? So it's not like it would avoid me somehow. But, yeah, I think it's sad that, you know, sad that he passed. But I don't know, much more to say.
And I think R2-D2 was more a beloved character than C-3PO anyway.
Oh, I mean, always.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a choice of only one of them being in a movie, I think most people would pick R2-D2. C-3PO is just a little bit annoying. I mean, he served his purpose. It's kind of like comic relief.
I met both in person at Disney Star Wars weekend. Met both R2-D2 and C-3PO. And they were both very nice to me. C-3PO, I was like, oh, hey, 3PO. And he was like, oh, hello, how are you? And I was like, I'm just doing great. How are you? And he's like, very well, thank you. And he kept walking. So that was pretty impressive. And then R2 just, he yelled at me because I was in his way. He was trying to get in a picture photo op thing. Classic R2. So those are just moments I had with both of them.
I never met Kenny Baker. I saw Anthony Daniels. So.
I mean, I never saw either of those guys, but I met R2-D2 and C-3PO. So.
Oh, you're talking about the actual characters.
Yeah.
All right.
It was like I almost cried because it felt so real.
And that is something. I don't know if you guys ever experienced that in Star Wars weekends, how realistic those characters were, because C-3PO would actually talk to you.
Mm-hmm, that's what I'm saying. I blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, I had a picture taken with C-3PO, and he asked me what my name was, and I said it was Joe, and he says, oh, hello, Joe. You know?
Yeah, it freaks you out.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. I can't believe, and it's like almost an Anthony Daniels voice. It's like
It's a really good Anthony Daniels. Same thing happened with the R2. Like, I was just walking, and whoever the guy that was controlling him with a backpack somewhere was, like, I was having to walk right in front of where he was trying to just rain, because like this, the R2 kind of shows up to random photo ops. He kind of just like photo bombs him, I think, sometimes. And so, like, I was walking past, and the little robot comes up, and out, and it was like, burp, burp, burp. and I was like, oh, hey, sorry, R2. And it was like, wah, wah. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'll get out of the way. And it like backed up forward back and I got out of the way. And then they kind of beeped around me. And I was like, ooh, he's in a rush.
Yeah. And I've seen like a hot girl bend down to kiss R2 and he do that. Wah!
Yeah. Yeah. So good. Whoever's controlling that's doing a good job.
Yeah.
Good job.
Anyway, I hope they bring Star Wars Weekends back.
I'm sure.
Who do they think I rid of that?
I don't think we're going to get it back. I don't think they're going to need it anymore. It's going to be Star Wars all the time. It kind of already is at the studios.
Yeah, I guess you're right in a way. But they might have some sort of special event. Next news story, The Force Awakens 3D Blu-ray was finally announced to be released on November 15th. For those of us who have 3D TVs, we're kind of screwed that we didn't get the 3D the same day as it was released. What was it, back in April? Was that when it came out?
It came out, yeah, like first weekend in April.
It was kind of a bummer because usually I just get the 3D versions. The big thing I noticed here is it seems like there's a director's commentary by J.J. Abrams, and I think that's probably cool, but is that worth rebuying the whole set if you have the original? I mean, all right, if you have a 3D TV, yeah. If you're into the director's commentary, yep. There's more deleted scenes. One deleted scene that I heard about that is supposed to be on there is... Who was the character that Simon Pegg was playing? Was it Umbar Plot or...
It was the junk three dealer. Quarter portions.
Yeah. They cut out a scene where he actually went to Maz Kanata's cantina. I'm going to call it that. I don't know what the actual name is. But anyway, he went there and he saw Rey and he started yelling at her for stealing the Falcon. And Chewie got up and ripped his arm off. So we might see.
I was wondering why there were no dismemberments in that movie.
Yeah, as they cut it out. Well, Chewie, now, did he make it to the bar or was he like inside the Falcon the whole time? I forget. I didn't think, I thought it was just Han and...
I think he showed up later at the bar because he was in the bar when like everything went down.
But that's cool though. I mean, I'd like to see that scene, but it'll probably leak on YouTube and stuff like that. But
yeah, that's funny. I'm trying to think of, did anybody lose an arm in episode 7? That seems like a Star Wars cliche.
Yeah, that was part of our Star Wars bingo too, to see if anyone was going to lose a limb.
Kylo Ren got hit really hard in his limb. Like, he should have lost a leg getting a bowcaster to his leg gut thing, but he didn't, so...
Yeah, and you would have thought he lost an arm, too. Yeah, I mean, I watched over and over again, and yeah, he's still got all of his limbs. Just got a messed up face.
Classic messed up face.
It doesn't interest me. I don't have a 3D TV. A lot of the companies have cut back or stopped making 3D TVs completely. I'm surprised they're not doing a 4K at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. You're just like, man, that's going to come out again, a 4K one. And I think that's interesting. It kind of sucks being a 3D TV owner, wanting to future-proof myself because I'm going to have to get a 4K TV eventually. Probably next year when both the new PS4 and the new Xbox release, when they can actually output 4K stuff. But like, I have to choose now between 3D and 4K, right? Like, so like Batman vs. Superman came out. It's $30 for the 4K version and it's $30 for the 3D version. And you're like, why not both? Like, why can't I have the 3D 4K bundle? You know, but you can't. They give you a different disc that can make you choose.
Now, how does that work though?
Hmm?
I don't know if I'm going off topic here.
No, what do you mean?
If you have like let's say Blu-ray has kind of been the digital standard.
Uh-huh.
What do they do? Just upscale the image to 4K, or they restore
it's
it
a
off
separate...
of the film prints? I don't. How does that work?
Well, film itself isn't limited in that kind of sense. So things shot digitally that weren't shot at a 4K level are going to have to be like upconverted, like 3D was for a lot of movies. Like when they transferred like Phantom Menace to 3D, they'll have to do something like that. But film itself, like things shot on film, it's still an analog format. That should be fine. Like I have a 4K TV. I unfortunately got one without HDR, so I'm gonna probably have to get another one to work with the Neo.
Yeah, that's so much annoying garbage that's going on with like the different platforms.
Right. I got mine fairly cheap. It was on like I got it when we moved. You know, had a bigger living room, needed a bigger TV. It's March Madness sale. I'll go get, you know, this TV for this amount. And it works fine. I think I upgraded to Netflix 4K, which is mostly just upscaling stuff. And it doesn't look all that great, I'll say right now.
What speed's your internet for that?
Oh, I have Comcast's highest package.
Okay, because, yeah.
I've downloaded files direct from big sources like Apple at like 8 or 9 megabits a second.
Yeah, because you have to have really high speed for 4K.
Yeah, I have a 150 package. Usually it seems that I can download like from a speed test site when I'm, you know, when I'm in the room with the router or hardwired to the router at like 170, 180.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm getting a good deal there. Costs an arm and a leg, but when you run like sometimes you're playing a game and streaming a video while your wife's streaming a video at the same time, you know, you kind of need it.
Yeah, it's those weird first world problem that you need the highest speed internet for, you know, like it's funny because when I was, you know, the same thing, I don't think Bright House has options as big as Comcast does, even though Comcast is a crap company for the most part. They definitely have better, cheaper internet speed options because I'm spending, I think, less than I was in Tampa here in Seattle. And yeah, I'm getting 70 megabits per second down.
Wow,
download.
That's so good.
Yeah, so it's that would be enough, I think, to stream 4K once that happens.
Yeah, I think it's like 70 to 90 or something like that.
If not, I would upgrade because, you know, I'm a sucker for that. But yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to future-proof. Right now I have Batman vs. Superman and Deadpool in 4K, and Deadpool's actually a 4K Blu-ray, which won't play in any... I have two separate highest-end video game consoles under my TV, and neither of them will play this disc. I assumed it would be like Blu-ray where, like, you know, you buy a 1080p Blu-ray, but if your TV is 720, it'll still output it. But no, 4K, you need to have a 4K player. It's a special player.
There's only like one or two models out right now, too.
Yeah, and once again, right now the Xbox One S is kind of doing what the PS3 did at first. It is the cheapest, best way to get a HDR and 4K player for 4K output. However, it won't, when the Scorpion comes out next year, that will play 4K games and the Xbox One S will not. So you're kind of, it's a half measure. Like if you had that 4K TV with HDR, then, you know, it might be worth your upgrade because you want to watch your 4K movies. But if you don't, then it's kind of like one of those, like, it's a real half step.
Yeah, I'm going to look for the HDR TV on Black Friday.
I would always watch, I'd say beware on Black Friday for TVs. From what I've read, they're always not the best kind of TV. They have less HDMI ports.
I might look for the, like, ones that they only, like, one or two in the store kind of thing.
And the good ones, yeah.
And I stay up here, I'm not with my family, so I could line up at the store at 5 o'clock at night. Because up in Massachusetts, stores are not allowed to be open on Thanksgiving at all.
Wow.
So they don't open at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the evening here. They can't open till 1 because they're not even allowed to have staff show up till after midnight.
That's awesome. Good for them.
Yeah.
That is pretty good. I wish that was everywhere.
Yeah.
A couple more states have adopted it, but it's always been the rule here. Like, it's like stores, like family owned with less than 15 that sell, or you have to sell groceries, or you have to have a pharmacy. Like, those are the only stores that could be open on Thanksgiving.
I was going to say really quick to Taylor, I picked up the Batman vs. Superman 3D, and if you get a chance to pick that up on eBay, I would. It is really good, especially that scene when they're first fighting and the rain is like right in the room. It's really good. I'm surprised. I only watch it now in 3D. It's one of the few movies that I enjoy watching in 3D.
So my problem with that was, well, one, the reason why I didn't go 3D because I saw it in theaters in 3D and I wasn't impressed. However, I feel like 3D in theaters is never as impressive as at home, which is a weird thing. You always have to like convince people. You're like, oh no, I have a 3D TV. It's actually better at home. And they're like, I don't know. You're like, it is, I promise. I love the ultimate cut, so I don't know if I could ever do that.
If you ever come back, I'll show it to you.
For sure.
Also, I was going to say, I hate what Disney does with 3D, too. They're doing the same crap with The Jungle Book. The Jungle Book's coming out on Tuesday. By now, you guys, it'll probably be out if you're listening to this. And they're releasing the 3D version, I think, towards the end of the year. I don't like the way that they're handling 3Ds. If they're going to release it, just release it the same time as when the regular version comes out. They're just trying to get us to double dip, and I don't appreciate it. And The Jungle Book looked amazing in 3D.
It did.
So I'm not picking up the standard version. I'm waiting for the 3D version.
I mean, that, it really was. The 3D in the theater was just incredible in that movie.
Yeah. All right, so getting on to our Marvel news, it looks like the Guardians of the Galaxy will be coming to Epcot in the form of a roller coaster replacing Ellen's Energy Adventure.
That's a shame. I like the Energy ride.
You know, I've never been on that ride. I have to go on it now before it's gone. What is that? That's like a 45-minute ride, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to let everybody else go because I'm going to rant here.
Okay.
No, I mean, I like the Energy ride. I like Epcot with the scientific bent and the world showcase. I just love walking around that. I'm kind of disappointed to see Epcot turning more into a Disney property attraction more. You know, like, I'd prefer to see more about Norway than go on a Frozen one. I prefer to see the Energy show versus a Guardians of the Galaxy. And I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. That's not Epcot to me. I know the place probably needs a little bit of a shot in the arm because I don't know how the attendance for Epcot compares to the other ones. And some of the rides need updating, but for replacing it, I don't know. But, you know, I'd rather see Guardians of the Galaxy in Disney Studios or, well, basically Disney Studios is where it would fit more than anywhere else. But, yeah, it's the same thing. Animal Kingdom going to an Avatar land. I'm sorry. I just don't see how those things fit. And you're getting away from the original theme of that park. But hey, you know, when it's there, I'll try it out and see it like everybody else. But like I said, I'd rather see Epcot stay more true to its original vision, I guess. So that's all I got to say on it.
You know, I would be more upset if it was replacing Tower of Terror like it is in Disneyland. Because I really like the Tower of Terror. It's one of my favorite rides. But in this case, I'm kind of like, you know, I don't think I've ever been to that ride, and I don't know if I'll ever go to that ride. So Guardians of the Galaxy will be awesome. I'm glad that they're finally, like, it's taken this long, really, to get Marvel and Star Wars in those Disney parks, because, like, Marvel was over at Universal, and Star Wars is just never anywhere, really. I mean, they're the one ride, right? But I'm just excited about new stuff, you know. I like new stuff. It's always fun.
Yeah, before Ron goes, I'll just say, it's kind of weird. I mean, because that's supposed to be Futureland, and it just doesn't seem like it fits. It's like, why a roller coaster? It's not really teaching anybody anything, and that does go away from the theme of teaching, like what Jack said. But I am kind of thinking that the issue with Guardians is maybe this next one is going to be really, really good, because they are starting to push this a little more. So maybe they know something that we don't. It is kind of odd that they're pushing it in both Disneyland and Disney World, that they're trying to build rides around it. And I know the whole issue with Universal, that we can't use the Marvel characters, but there's a loophole with the Guardians that we can. I just don't know. Even though we can, does that mean we should? And I think that my answer would be no. I'd rather them see something that's more educational, more fun, and definitely not a roller coaster. But to say what Jack was saying about, like, these rides, like he liked Maelstrom better than Frozen. I've been on Frozen, and I like that ride so much better than Maelstrom. And
No, what I'm saying is I'd rather see an updated ride about Norway. Redo the Maelstrom as a more updated Viking ride or something. Make it a Viking version of Pirates of the Caribbean and throw some talk about the different historical figures that were Vikings rather than Anna and Elsa. I mean, not that I dislike Frozen, but you don't learn anything about Norway from Frozen.
No, that's true. I mean, and I'm not a huge fan of Frozen either, but I did enjoy the ride and the animatronics.
And same thing, maybe if they had said, we're going to get rid of Mission Space and make that Guardians of the Galaxy, do something about space starring the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hmm.
You want to talk about space travel? Yeah, sure. Have Rocket trying to build a hyperdrive or something why it's hard. You know, do something like that versus a roller coaster.
Yeah. But I was going to say, too, though, I mean, again, after riding the Frozen ride, I would have liked to have seen something in Italy with Pinocchio. And I wouldn't mind if they did something like that, or maybe, like, do Alice in Wonderland in England, because most of those countries don't even have rides. I don't know. I really... I'm not a huge fan of Frozen, but I did like the ride, and I would like to see something like that in every country. I'm probably in the minority here. I get what you're saying, and you're right in a way. We should be learning more about the country, but I also want to enjoy myself too and get the feel of the movies and stuff like that. All right, Ron, let's hear it.
All right, this just outright pisses me off to no end. This is just absolute laziness and shoehorning. Frozen at least could have some sort of nebulous ties, and I think they're stronger than nebulous. I mean, yeah, it's based off at least Scandinavian mythology in some sense. Hans Christian Andersen was, you know, born in Denmark, but when he was born, Denmark was actually part of Norway at the time for the first few years of his life. So it at least has some ties there. This is just like, oh, future, space. Yeah, that makes sense. But even then, it's not set in any kind of future. It's still contemporary. It's, and just a roller coaster. It's still just not, I understand needing thrill rides in Epcot. I love energy. I could see it's time to go. But everything combined just makes this feel bad. Mm. There's just no thought going into it whatsoever. If they surprise me and put some sort of technology teaching, like not even really teaching, like I don't think like Test Track really teaches you anything, but it still feels like it kind of does in concept. Mission Space doesn't really teach you too much about like this astronaut training, but it gives you just an oversight. I think if they could tie it in any way, yeah, I'll eat my words on this, but I don't see it working. I mean, on other shows, on Around the Hub, I pitched, if you want to bring in an IP to energy that works, you have Big Hero 6, a good selling movie with characters that are likable and can be used to teach. And you can still put a bit of a throw element in there. It just, everything about this just feels wrong. And it goes back to, I can't remember his name, Bob Chapek doesn't understand what the parks do. Every park is now becoming the Magic Kingdom. And the studios and Animal Kingdom, I could see that a little bit more. They always have those more fantasy elements to them. Avatar, yes, it has nothing to do with real life animals, but they're just as much real as dragons were. And if you look at Avatar as a movie, the animals felt like a consistent ecosystem. They made sense together. They look like they evolved all on the same planet. So having that as the fantasy element, that seems fine. But just shoehorning this into Epcot just to put in the franchise and to put in a roller coaster just doesn't sit well. And I really, really hope, you know, we're really wrong on this rumor.
So this is just, it's a rumor. It's not confirmed.
Right. There's been some good evidence that something's going to happen at Energy. We've seen height test balloons over there. And, you know, our sources have been pretty good of late. But even, you know, when we have things that are announced by Disney, they don't always happen. So hopefully there's been enough of a backlash that they considered putting something else in. I don't mind if characters go there. If they do something like, you know, something about the energy of the Infinity Stones, or I would have fit fine in space, or teach us something about anything. I don't know just how Guardians fits. I mean, you have Rock and Roller Coaster that could use a re-theme sitting across there, and Guardians music would have fit perfectly into that with some theming.
Yeah.
I just think they're like, Epcot needs a quick fix, and we don't care.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you're going to do something with Guardians, I would rather them not, just because let's have all of Marvel. Don't put, like, one little piece that we have. Because that doesn't feel like Marvel.
And they can't call it Marvel or Guardians, like, on the building or in any advertising that's Florida-aimed. They could say, they can't call it Marvel at all, I believe, in any kind of ads. And they can't target anything for that ride to a Florida ad. It has to be national ads only. And this is all under the contract with Universal.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a bad idea. And like you said, hopefully the backlash that they're having from people will just make them decide, let's go another route with this. But I would say, too, I think probably one thing that these people are forgetting, these people in charge is, what would Walt think about this? Because I'm pretty sure he wouldn't want to move forward with something like this.
I don't always agree with that. Walt loves promoting his properties. I never go into that argument. And honestly, as of December, Walt's dead for 50 years. And I pretty much have a rule. I don't care what anybody who's been dead for more than 25 years has to say about anything. You're just not part of the modern... You have no sense of, you know, what's going on. But I don't think he'd have a problem with Guardians going into it. I think he would have a problem with not keeping a theme.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that that would be his biggest problem. And I think that Epcot would definitely have been a completely different animal if he was alive when it was being constructed. It's unfortunate that, you know, he passed away too soon. But I think he would be more into the learning aspect of something like that. Like I said, I still think that people should kind of respect Walt's vision, and just throwing in something like Guardians is just kind of trying to profit off something that's popular. Could be fun, you know, and like you said, hopefully we were wrong. I'm sure there's going to be 3-hour lines when that thing opens up, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, at least we won't have to wait as long for Soarin'.
That's true. All right, our next bit of news is Thor Ragnarok may have a Doctor Strange cameo. We've seen recent photos where Thor, Chris Hemsworth, and Loki, Tom Hiddleston, looks like they've been in New York and they're in street clothes, duds. And Thor is holding a card that says 177A Bleecker Street, which is the address of Doctor Strange. What do you think? You think we're going to see him?
Yeah, I think we are. I'm very excited about it. That's all I got to say.
You could say more, Taylor.
I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, that's so exciting.
I thought it was going
to
break into Martha there.
Martha. No, like, it's just so exciting because I love Doctor Strange, and, like, I like that. I mean, it makes sense, too, because really the next big movie that we assumed Doctor Strange was going to be in was Infinity War, and it'd be nice to see him thought of as this great person in a movie before that, right? As the Sorcerer Supreme, and not just kind of like, I feel like we're not going to see as many cameos in Doctor Strange as we will, because it's lots of origin stories and stuff. We'll see hints, but I don't think we're going to see, you know, a lot of Avengers in that. So the fact that they're kind of Thor, it's so funny. I think both Civil War and Thor 3 are kind of their own mini Avengers movies on their own, which is true about comic books, right? When you're reading a Thor comic book, Thor interacts with other people, and so does Iron Man or Captain America. They're not just by themselves. So it's really clever in the fact that we're like, wow, you know, all these, it's so connected that even in their own movies, they still have to get help from these other characters because that's what they do in the comic books. And so I just think I'm just super excited that Doctor Strange is going to be in Thor. I mean, if his address is there and it's all in a cool, like, scripty font and he's, you know, on a subway, where else is Thor going? But also, why is Thor in the subway? Like, why doesn't he just fly over there? But, I mean, I guess if Ragnarok happened and he's no longer Thor, or he's dead, or whatever shenanigans happens in Ragnarok, then we don't know, but it's exciting.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, too, what you said about Civil War and how Thor Ragnarok is kind of turning into that in a way, because we normally expected Loki was going to be back for it, but we got the Hulk in there, too, and if you add Doctor Strange and... Who knows? We might even get some other characters coming in there, too. But it doesn't seem like when it first was announced, Thor Ragnarok, this is not the movie I expected. And from, like, what we've seen of, like, Thor being in New York City, and now Hulk is part of, you know, the movie and stuff like that, it's going to be vastly different from the comic book, I could assume.
Yeah. I didn't read the comic, though, so I'm not sure even what Ragnarok's about.
You want to go, Ron?
Ragnarok's
about. Yeah, I mean... Everything's got to be intertwined. I mean, for all we know, this is just the end cap where, you know, they're looking for the last stone or something. And it's they've tracked it to the eye. Yeah. I mean, it could be anything.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see Doctor Strange show up in Thor anyway. Part of what I didn't like about the Dark World was there seemed to focus too much on... taking away the magic from Asgard, I thought. You know, I like the fact that Asgard has magic. Thor and Odin have magic, not just science that is so far ahead of us we don't understand. I want to believe Thor's hammer works at magic, that it comes back to his hand when he throws it. Not that, you know, he's built circuitry or something into the hammer that it does that. So the introduction of magic into the MCU, I'm looking forward to it in Doctor Strange, even though I have absolutely no idea what to make of it from the trailers. I am excited about it. And you know what? If they start bringing the magic back into the Thor movies, I'm all for it. I think that'll be good. Ragnarok, I don't get why this movie's quite called Ragnarok, aside from they're trying to use a mythological name. When it sounds like really a buddy trip of them skipping around through the different realms. You know, Ragnarok is when Loki, I think he frees the wolf, and Surtur burns Asgard and all this, the fire demons rise up. I don't get that sense from anything in the movies that we've heard so far. But I think Thor will be fun, because let's face it, a Thor-Hulk buddy movie, how could you not want to watch that? But yeah, I hope Doctor Strange does show up and throw a little bit more magic into Thor and the Asgardians versus them, you know, flying spaceships and shooting lasers out of staffs and stuff. That's not Asgard to me, but I'm hoping Thor Ragnarok is fun.
I think it'd be fun to see when Loki first sees Hulk again after what he did to him in the last movie.
Honestly, I'd love to see Doctor Strange put Loki in his place. Shut up, Loki, and throw the bands of whatever on him and keep him quiet, and just see Thor and Doctor Strange talking while Loki's rolling around trying to get out of the bands of Sidorok or whatever the name were. That'd be worth the price of admission almost.
Well, I do wonder how powerful Doctor Strange is going to be at this point. Like, is he still going to be a bit of a novice after his debut movie? I don't know if
I have to assume that after this movie, he's going to be the Sorcerer Supreme, right? Like the all-powerful. At least I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, I mean, Sorcerer Supreme, he is the big cheese when it comes to magic in the dimension. Like I said, Loki might give him some trouble, but at the end of it, he could probably strip Loki of his powers.
Hmm. Now, Jack, you said that the hammer was, Mjolnir, was tied to electronics from Dark World.
Well, I mean, everything they keep saying, like Odin, like, oh, we're not gods. Yeah, well, you know, you run around calling yourself the God of Thunder, you know, come on. They kind of have put it out there that, you know, Thor, Asgard, and the MCU is really, these are just a bunch of hyper-advanced beings that, oh, well, we call it magic because we don't understand how their science works. You know, but it is still science. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, throwing midichlorians in with the Force a little bit, you know? I mean, I want to believe Odin has the Odin Force that he can put his will onto objects and make a magic. Not that, you know, he just happens to know how to make these things happen by science that we don't understand. I would expect Tony Stark to say that as a line, because Tony Stark can't understand anything that's really not technology. But for that to be the standard line of how Asgard is looked at, I don't know, kind of, like I said, it's like throwing midichlorians into the Force.
Yeah, but he could have been dumbing it down for humans, too.
Well, like I said, it's I think the subject of magic has been shied away from until the MCU decided to bring Doctor Strange in.
Yeah, because even, what's her name, Scarlet Witch, just seems like it's kind of weird. It doesn't seem like real magic.
Well, Scarlet Witch, I think they just don't understand what to do with her powers. Because let's face it, her powers are hard to get a good fix on. But they tried. I mean, is she telekinetic? Does she create force fields? Does she levitate? What, you know, what does she do? And her powers are whatever the script needs them to do.
Mm.
And I think that's a severe problem with the character. You know, I like what they've done with her, but I don't quite think it would. I don't think it would quite flow in the comics. I think in a comic book, people would be like, "Well, what the heck? Where does this go?" People are a little bit more picky about the rules in the comics than they are in the movies. They're just excited to see the Scarlet Witch on film.
Okay. Hey, did we get to Euron? I forgot.
No, and I mean, Ragnarok in the books was part of Avengers Disassembled, if I remember.
Which was awesome. That storyline was just awesome.
So, yeah, I enjoyed that. I think it's going to have some sort of Fall of Asgard elements to it. I don't know how far they're going to go with it, but I think, you know, this is theoretically the last Thor movie until everything gets rebooted with Infinity War. So they could do whatever they want, really.
Well, I'm starting to look forward to it, though. I mean, especially with the photos that we've recently seen. It'd be kind of cool to see Thor and Loki working together again. Kind of had a cliffhanger at the last one, so I'm sure they're going to have to explain what Loki's role is in all of this. And I guess that comes out next year, I guess, right? 2017? Towards the end?
Is that the spring movie?
Oh, is it the spring one?
No, Panther's spring, right? I think
They moved it. Well, Spider-Man's coming out, so, you know. Spider-Man is coming out in May, I think, or...
So they're not doing another Disney MCU movie in the spring?
Yeah. Yeah, they did a whole shake-up after they announced Spider-Man was at the MCU. Panther's pushed back.
They had to make room on that schedule.
Yeah, Panther might even... It's either at the end of the year or it's in 2018.
Well, yeah, I mean, Thor's the one furthest along in production, so I guess it's next.
Yeah. And, of course, Jack is having us all eat humble pie.
What was that, Joe? What? Can you repeat that? You kind of broke up a little bit.
Yeah, we're kind of eating some humble pie because Jack's been saying for a while that we might be seeing the Tinkerer come to Spider-Man Homecoming, and it appears he has been right. Actor Michael Chernus will be portraying the Tinkerer in Spider-Man Homecoming. I don't know who he is. I've seen pictures of him compared to what the Tinkerer looks in the comic books. Looks nothing like him. But hopefully, I'm hoping that it's a minor character, because I think that this movie's getting kind of filled as it is with too many people, too many villains.
Like I kind of said, I think it's the villains, the bulk of them are just going to be for special effects fights. Yeah, they might move the story a little bit forward, but it's a special effects fest that you could show Spider-Man fighting somebody with superpowers. But there'll be something that links them all together to put them on the trail of the Tinker. And the Vulture, you know, like I said, maybe the Vulture is working with the Tinkerer or something. I don't know how they're going to work that out, because I can't see them getting Michael Keaton and not making him the big bad.
Oh, no, he's been confirmed as the Vulture.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like the guy playing the Shocker. Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, you have the Shocker in there. But I can't see them getting someone like Michael Keaton for the Vulture to just have a set piece fight. You know, they're going to do more with him because, geez, otherwise it'd be a waste. If you get him on the set, you want to use him.
And that was another villain that they talked about too. Is like, was it the Shocker?
Yeah, the Shocker showing up.
All these could easily just be like the client. The you know, Spider-Man's fighting all these tech villains, and it leads him to the Tinkerer.
Yeah, that's how I think it's going to go.
And, I mean, you know, maybe, like, the Tinkerer himself's not going to be able to be the final fight. He'll just be, like, leading some sort of gauntlet to him, and maybe the Vulture is there at the end, like, with the Tinkerer.
From what I read, too, like, from the news briefings, is that this Tinkerer apparently was working for Stark at one point, and I don't know if he got let go, or he went off on his own or something like that. So, yeah, that could add something interesting to it.
You know what? I wished I wouldn't do stuff like that. Only because not everything needs to be interconnected. Why can't the Tinkerer just be doing this on his own? He doesn't need to have a sordid past with Tony Stark. You know what I mean? Sometimes bad guys do things on their own. They don't have to be the result of, well, like Tony Stark being Tony Stark.
I mean, he could have just stolen their, like, repulsor technology to make these things, so...
Yeah.
And it did seem like in the movie that Tony Stark basically invented everything with his suit.
That's what I mean, you know. It's not everything always has to be interconnected.
Well, we'll see. You know, hopefully it'll be a good movie. I am kind of looking forward to seeing Spider-Man on the big screen again, especially after Civil War. And we'll be seeing that next year. I guess it's coming close to a close. They're filming in Atlanta. Should be done pretty soon. And, you know, definitely we'll be in theaters next year. So let's get into some other news. It's not Marvel or... or Star Wars related. How many guys here saw Suicide Squad? I'm not sure. I know I've seen it. Taylor's seen it.
I've seen it.
Yep.
I haven't seen it.
So, yeah, I guess, like, quick impression. It came out and it got unfavorable reviews, but it seems like it's doing fairly well, though. At the box office right now, as of this recording, the worldwide gross is about $600 million, which is actually pretty good. It's not too far behind Superman, and it still seems like it's got some legs. It's been number one for 3 weeks in a row, and looks like it's going to be number one again. I don't know if this is the third week or not. But they haven't had much competition, too. I mean, they've had Sausage Party, Ben-Hur, Pete's Dragon, and...
Which was very good. I recommend Pete's Dragon.
I know you said you really like Pete's Dragon.
It's a better movie than Suicide Squad.
Did you see Pete's Dragon?
Yeah.
You liked it?
Yeah, I thought it was good. It had nothing to do with the original at all, but it was still a good movie.
Oh, good. Maybe I will go see it. Suicide Squad really doesn't have much competition right now. And I guess we all kind of have different impressions about what we felt about the movie. Let's go to our DC resident fanboy, Taylor, and let's see what he had to say about it.
It was a mediocre... It was a mediocre trade that someone read and then cut out most of the plot and made it in a 2.5-hour movie. So... It kind of didn't make sense, but the characters were there, and you're like, that's kind of fun. So that's Suicide Squad.
Wow, that's a short one for you, Taylor.
That's pretty bad for you, Taylor.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's, like, I enjoyed it. Was I confused at why, like, at one point the helicopter got taken down? Yeah, I have no idea. Still don't know why that. Was I confused at why the bad guy was doing what the bad guy was doing and who the bad guy's brother was pretty much the whole time? Kinda, because I don't know any of these characters. Like, this is my first time, I think, going into one of these movies not knowing all the characters. And I think that's why there's lots of things that were able to pass for me in Batman vs. Superman, because, yeah, the average person going into the movie didn't know why Lex Luthor was doing what he was doing, but I was like, well, I know why Lex Luthor's doing what he's doing, and I know who Superman is, and I know why Batman wants to do this or that. I get that, but like this, I'm like, I don't know who El Diablo is. I don't know. I mean, I pretty much only knew Deadshot, Harley, Joker, and Captain Boomerang, right? I mean, Killer Croc barely, but like, whatever. And so I was like, Rick Flag, dumb. I don't like that guy. He's boring. Enchantress, I don't know who she is, really. Like, I'm like, okay, so she's a Sorceress Slayer. She's super strong. So, again, they're playing with this magic thing that no one's really played with and saying, like, look how strong magic can be, but then it's not that strong because it could be defeated by Harley Quinn, right? I don't know. Well, you need El Diablo to do things that he does. Like, it was super fun, so I still give it, like, a 7 out of 10. Like, I enjoy the colors, and the soundtrack was excellent, and there was cool action scenes, and it was cool, but, like, was it great? I go to movies just to have fun, though. Like, I don't watch Oscar movies. Mm-hmm. They're always boring, with the exception of, like, The Wolf of Wall Street, or, like, sometimes there's ones here or there. You're like, wow, that's really fun. Anything in the animation department's usually a great movie, but... So if that's not what I'm looking for, I'm not looking for the movie Suicide Squad starring Margot Robbie and Will Smith to like blow me away, right? I'm not expecting Lawrence of Arabia out of this movie, right? I'm just expecting an explosive, fun time where Batman may or may not punch somebody, and he does twice, sort of. And then spoiler alert, but the Flash shows up, so I'm sold already. I'm already like. Squealing in my seat with like on the edge of my seat, like jumping up and down because I'm like, holy crap, there's the Flash doing Flash things. Captain Boomerang, he's in trouble now. Rogues, watch out, the Flash is here. And that alone gets me, the fanboy, to be like, this movie's great, woohoo! But like trying to think about it as a movie critic, yeah, sure, there's no plot in that movie. But does there, I mean, they're going a place, they crash a place, they're supposed to do a thing, that thing is dumb, they try to do another thing. And they bond along the way. Meanwhile, Joker pops in and out doing Jokery things, trying to save Harley Quinn. Like, there you go. Was that so bad? No.
Yeah, it was.
How was it?
Yeah, because you see them... I thought the movie was, barely watchable. There were some great moments to it. I would recommend it as a DVD or Netflix. I don't recommend going out, like, rushing out to see it.
Well, but, I'd never recommend a DVD.
You just see...
480p.
Having the right, like, seeing all these choices they make, and then making the wrong choice. Like, and I'm not blaming any single person for this, And from what we know, this movie was just a screw-up of epic proportions from all the way around. Yes, it was written in 6 weeks, and then the studio got a hold of it and changed it, and then the tone of the trailer wasn't what they wanted, so they got a hold and changed it again, and then they had to cancel parts of the TV show and do, like, everything that could have gone wrong seems to have. Like, the movie's moving along okay until you get to the scene in the bar. And then all of a sudden, motivations just change for no reason. Like, I think 3/4 of the conversation in that bar just got edited out that would make all of a sudden dead. Like, there could have just been a lot of, like, a dead shot. If we don't go do this, your daughter dies too. That would get him to move. And then, you know, he could get the others to move instead of just like, oh, here's, you've had letters from my daughter. Oh, suddenly I'm going to go change my mind, either because I think you've been an a-hole this whole time. I'm still going to go help you. It just made these wrong choices. The Joker did not need to be in the movie at all. There were parts of there were moments I liked Jared Leto's Joker and moments I didn't. I think there was some sort of weird backstory here with, and I've read this on the internet, some other sites, like, because the way he acts with Harley has never been a way he's acted with Harley. He's always seen her as disposable.
They re-edited it. You could tell, okay, so I agree with you. Like, when you're watching this movie, it is like, wow, the Joker really cares about Harley. Like, that's weird. That's never happened before.
I think he thought she was pregnant.
Maybe.
I think she might have been pregnant when Batman got her, and then she may have miscarried. And he doesn't know that, and that's why he's trying to rescue her. I think that would have been a great plot line. I think it was there, and then they cut it. Because
I think they cut a lot. Well, I mean, the thing is, like, when Batman catches her in that movie,
he's abandoned her.
The Joker escaped, like, classic. I was like, oh, classic Joker and Harley situation. Like, he leaves Harley there and he gets away. But then he just kept coming back for her. And I was like, that's not, like, every time you see him, like, Harley will come back and she'll be like, oh, Mr. J, why didn't you come get me? He's like, it doesn't matter, Harley, you're back now. Yay. Like, because he didn't give a crap, right? Like, he's just like, oh, you're back. Great, cool. That's awesome. Glad you're back.
Did you see in the room where he's sitting with all the weapons surrounding him?
Yeah, the baby, like, things and, like, yeah.
My flesh.
I think that the movie that David Ayer made was different and dark and probably a decent movie. The movie we got was cut by that Trailer Park Studio because they wanted it to look like the thing that people liked on the internet, because they got cold feet after Batman vs. Superman. And so we got something that has no plot but is bright and colorful.
And the characters were fine. I was worried about Will Smith's Deadshot being too Will Smith. I think it was a little Will Smith. I don't think it was over the top for him. But other than him and Harley, the other characters didn't get developed at all. Like, Boomerang was just kind of left hanging. And Boomerang is just an asshole. But they didn't play it up as much as they could have. Croc doesn't have many defining personalities other than he's big, he's scary, he eats people. Flag made no sense. Like, why not just have him be the good Marine? Why does he have to be in love with Enchantress, who was a crappy villain?
Yeah.
And I don't even know who Incubus is. I've never heard of him in the books. Is he even in the books?
I think he's in the books, yeah.
But just, like, none of it made sense. It was, someone described it as, it's the video game boss who sends a million things at you, and then you get to him, and he's a, you know, you just have to figure out the trick to beat him. That's the whole way that movie ended. And, like, we know this giant weapon's doing something. We don't know what the weapon is. They don't ever describe it. All
it's
of a sudden,
doing bad things, and we have to stop it.
Right, and then, but okay, well, it looks magical, so let's throw a bomb at it? Like, nothing made any sense in that third act at all.
Yeah, I saw it, and I was shocked because for the first 40 minutes, I was like, I liked it. I liked, you know, that we were learning about the characters and everything. Like you said, Will Smith was actually pretty good as Deadshot. Harley was really good. I didn't like the Joker at all. That has to be the worst Joker we've ever seen. I mean, if you look at Cesar Romero, Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger is great, and Mark Hamill. He is by far the worst Joker we've ever seen. I hope they recast him in the future Batman movies because he just was not the Joker to me. Well, what was he? I mean, he owned a strip club. I mean, it just was so bizarre. I just didn't like it. But as soon as they got
all together and they landed in the city, that's when it just went downhill for me. Those creatures they were fighting were just so boring. It kind of reminded me of Resident Evil a little bit. And they were kind of like lemmings. Like, they were just so easy to defeat. It's just like they were just defeating one after the other, after the other. And I just wanted the movie to end at some point because I was getting so bored. And in the beginning, like, they were all trying to escape. And like you said, Ron, they go to the bar. And I'm like, what the hell is going on over here? You know, it seems like they were trying to give us an excuse to like them all. I mean, they're villains. We don't have to like them all.
Yeah, I was annoyed that they tried to make us like them. I'm like, no. And at least Harley Quinn was like, stop crying to El Diablo. Like, she was like, we're bad guys, stop it. Suck it up. But
well, even with her, you can be a little sympathetic for her. I mean, because of her relationship with the Joker, how she was, what was she, his therapist in Arkham
Asylum? Yeah, but
they
didn't even show that, though. That's what's weird about this movie is, like, you can't, if you're looking at this movie objectively, right, and not like you know anything, you look at that and you go, she fell in love with this guy, and then she decided herself to throw herself in the pit. He didn't push her in like he did in the comic books, right? She decided herself, like, she, and he seems to love her back, as far as we know from the cut that they showed us, right? It's not like he's abusive ever that you see. It's not like he is ever, like, any of those things. So there is no redeeming quality for Harley Quinn in this movie, more so than in the comic books, I would say.
She did look good, though, and I thought she played their role very well.
Oh, yeah. Everyone played their roles as good as they could have done with what they... I mean, definitely, like, the characters, like even Ron said, the characters were good, just there was no story.
Yeah, I think that in a way they probably should have had less characters. Like, Killer Croc, to me, just didn't look like Killer Croc. I mean, it just looked like something you would see out of the 80s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies or something like that. It just didn't look threatening. And he had a hood. He had a hood on.
I agree. I think they should have definitely, just for the fact of, like, even a shock moment when Slipknot got killed, they should have had I know this would have led to longer movie, but they should have had a pretend intro for him showing what he does and why he's cool and stuff, just so that when he's blown up, you're at least like, whoa. Because, like, when you knew that he'd have a bat, you're like, that guy's going to get blown up. Like, it wasn't even, like, a surprise. You're just like, well, we don't, who is that guy? He hasn't been in any of the posters. We don't know who that guy is at all. Like, oh, he's being convinced by Boomerang. Like, even in the comic book, the same thing happened to try to escape. Oh, I bet you he's going to get blown up. Like, they could have at least tried to pretend for that. But I don't know.
I'm glad they actually showed his head getting blown off, which is one thing I didn't think we were going to see. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they were going to kind of play around that. But,
yeah, because I was thinking that too, that they were going to reveal at the end. It was like, well, actually, they really weren't going to blow your heads off, you know, because we're not that bad. I think that was good in a way. But I also think, you know, it was funny, like, was the Enchantress's brother. When I first saw him, I thought that he could have been Raven's father, who I forget what's his name.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought too when I first saw the trailers. That's how I thought they were fighting. What's his name?
Yeah, I can't think of it, but
he's like the devil, basically. He's like this.
Yeah, it just reminded me of him, and I was like, wow, is he in this movie? And it ended up that it wasn't him. It's just that it was her brother, which just made no sense. And that end battle was horrible. And
even why they used the squad for this mission makes no sense at all. The squad's supposed to be able to go into places where the U.S. military shouldn't be. Yeah. This is recovering a U.S. city with the U.S. military in tow. Why do you send, like, a crazy girl with a hammer instead of just sending 30 more soldiers? Who Deadshot and Diablo and maybe Croc are the only ones that had any kind of exceptional abilities there. Boomerang, like, okay, so a guy with an AR-15 probably could do just as much damage as he's doing with his boomerangs.
Not like, if he was as good as he was in the comics, but he wasn't.
Right, it's just... Well, I mean, like, a SEAL Team 6 is a better movie, like, better situated for this than the squad.
Yeah, and I think, again, they did a, you know, disjustice for Boomerang. He could have been the standout character. In the trailers, I thought he was going to be in the movie, but they kind of left him flat.
They messed up with him since they made him a little more interesting after Identity Crisis, but then they just made him too, like, they took away the jokey part about him after a bit. And he just became, like, weirdly serious. They messed up with that character for a while, and I think they just didn't know what version they wanted to do in the movie.
Anyway, I guess what we're trying to say is Ron and I really didn't like it. It's probably a good rental. I wouldn't purchase it ever. I can't see me watching that over and over again. Taylor seemed to like it, though.
And you know? Jack saved $15.
Yeah, and Jack will see it eventually, I'm sure.
It's not Fantastic Four bad by far.
Right, that's the thing, right? It's not that bad. It's Fantastic Four, yet I feel like it's getting that treatment right now.
And I buy this out of the $5, $10 bin. Like, I wouldn't buy Fantastic Four.
Ever.
I buy it out of the $2 bin to set it on fire.
Yeah, Fantastic Four is just really bad, which is interesting. It's interesting that, like, I feel like not enough people are bringing that up. Like, I feel like everyone's hating, oh, DC is just complete crap. It's like, well, I know it's Fox. It's not Marvel, but it's still kind of like, well, there was that Fantastic Four movie that it's so bad that people forgot, I think, already. Like, that's how bad it was. Like, this movie at least has a little bit of staying power. People are going to dress up for it for Halloween. It's got a visual style to it. It's got, a young teen audience that is loving it. So it's just interesting that you can say, like, yeah, this movie is bad because it's not a good movie. I'm not saying it's a good movie, but it's fun to look at, right? Where Fantastic Four had nothing. And David Ayer is being real smart in this whole situation where he could be pulling a Josh Trank and going, I had a different cut of this movie and it was great, but he's just going, this is the cut. Thank you, DC. Oh, man, we had so much fun. Woo! What a time.
I respect.
What a time. Yeah, he's not like throwing anyone under the bus. He's not. He's just like, whatever, it's my movie, I'll take it. Because then he'll get a second one and maybe he'll get to help direct the Harley Quinn movie that might be really good, right? Or maybe he's just like, you know what? It's going to make money. I'm going to play nice. I'm not going to be like because Josh Trank ruined his career doing that, and maybe that was why David Ayer is not saying anything, because he watched that happen. But he's just like, yep, it's great, that's my cut. Nope, there are no other cuts, that's my cut. And maybe like in 6 months when the Blu-ray release comes out, or 3 months, he's gonna be like, oh, well, there's this other cut too that you can see, a director's cut, because they let me go recut the movie. It's fun. It's all fun, you guys. What a fun time. Woo! Well,
the bottom line, it doesn't matter what the critics say in the end. I mean, especially since this is doing pretty good box office.
Yeah, it was like 500 million a little bit ago, right?
So. Yeah, it's close to 600 million right now.
It's not going to... It doesn't look like it's going to hit that 750 that they need to count as a break-even.
For this movie, they need 750 to break-even?
That's what they said. They need 750. They put so much advertising in. And remember, they only get half of the box office.
And I guess you got to think that they spent a lot of money on that soundtrack. Man, that's an expensive soundtrack.
Yeah, like apparently, like, the reason Ballroom Blitz isn't in the movie is because it cost them a ton for the trailer alone.
And they even had, basically, they didn't get Bohemian Rhapsody. They got the cover that sounded almost just like it by Fall Out Boy or someone like that.
Oh, really? See, I didn't even notice that.
It's not the real Bohemian Rhapsody. Oh. It's a really, really, really close cover by a famous... Panic at the Disco, I think is who it is.
Yeah, I think... And I really like the other... Like, the soundtrack was great. The 21 Pilots, Heathens is a good song.
Yeah.
And it fit the movie well.
Great music choice. I mean, honestly, like, the soundtrack is worth... That's the best purchase you can make of this movie.
I will say one thing, too. I did like seeing Batman in this, especially with Deadshot. I thought that was pretty cool. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah, and the chase scene was great. Yeah, I don't think I've had any problems other than the voice with Batman so far in either of the movies.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not a fan of the voice, the modulated voice that they're having for Ben Affleck. But
I don't think it's any worse than the over-gravelization they did by Dark Knight Return or Dark Knight Rises.
That's true. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of cool when he kind of just swooped down when Deadshot was walking with his daughter. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, we told someone else that that Deadshot was in Gotham. And you're like, oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I guess like at some point, if you guys haven't seen it, just check it out when it comes out on home video. Definitely a rental. Don't know if it's a purchase. You think you're going to buy it, Taylor?
Yep.
Okay. Well, good for you.
Hope Thanks.
Enjoy it. Last thing we're going to talk about is... Star Trek Beyond. We've all seen that one, I think. I know I've seen it, Taylor's seen it, Jack's seen it. Ron, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we can talk about that. Unfortunately, Star Trek Beyond is not doing good box office. It's up to $230 million right now, and right now it's only got a 31% international base, which kind of stinks. I mean, you really got to have at least 50% and hopefully more with the international box office in order to make some decent change. And it just doesn't seem to have hit well with the international box office. We'll kind of go through our impressions about it. And I guess since Jack's been quiet, let's start with Jack.
No, I like Star Trek Beyond. I think the chemistry between the actors who are portraying the crew is terrific. They seem to really have it down. Carl Urban is just great. I think he has bones down better than anybody else's any other role there. Yeah, I'm surprised it's not doing better. I really think Into Darkness hurt Beyond an awful lot, that people saw the last one and just didn't like it, and they're not willing to go back for a third time. And it's too bad, because it really was a pretty good movie. And I enjoyed it. I thought the special effects were cool. I thought the new alien girl was very good. She's an interesting character. I thought the end fight in Zero Gravity was very cool. I thought that they did a good job on that. There was a lot to like in that movie, but it just doesn't seem to be taking off. I don't know if it's the poor marketing of it, because really, compared to other summer movies, you really didn't hear an awful lot about Star Trek Beyond. It's almost as if, like, the studio said, well, Star Trek fans will know what's coming and they'll go see it. Yeah, but nowadays you can't just... you need the general audience to buy into it, not just fans of the franchise. And I think that was a big misstep for them, because it really was a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say really quick, I agree with you about the whole marketing issue. I don't think they pushed it enough, and I don't think the trailers really sold anybody. And it's unfortunate. I think that they could have reworked it where people would have maybe gone to see it, like if we got a better trailer than the ones that we saw.
Yeah, and I know there are some there are people who are fans of the Beastie Boys, but that kind of pulls me out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I can't believe everybody is so nostalgic for... when were the Beastie Boys out? 2000s?
Sabotage was like 94.
Yeah. Early to mid-90s.
I can't believe that with all the stuff that went on through Earth in the Star Trek timeline, that in the 22nd century or 23rd century, they're still listening to the Beastie Boys.
Well,
they
weren't still listening. It was like, right, wait, when does Star Trek take place? Would Idris Elba's thing been around when Beastie Boys were a thing?
No, that would have been around 2175.
Okay, so like, wow, like 125 years, 130, 140
years.
Yeah,
I can't see the Beastie Boys being that big a hit going forward.
But you got to think about the fact that 140 years, Beastie Boys is like when you listen to the old-timey station, right? Like, it's more than that.
They call it classical, and I didn't have a problem with this because one of the things in Star Trek for years, everybody listens to jazz and classical stuff that was in the public domain so yeah, they could do it. And, you know, acknowledging, like, people, like, listen to stuff that's old. And I didn't have a problem with it in this one because they showed it's something that Kirk liked
right
in the first one.
Exactly.
If they had just done it without that, I would have been a little angry. But bringing the call back to, like, this is stuff Kirk likes.
This is literally the first scene you ever... well, the first time you ever saw Kirk in the Star Trek new universe of these movies is him listening to Sabotage driving that, like, you know, driving that car. And so,
right,
like, when he hears that song, he's like... yeah.
But what's annoying is this is the third time. We've had three movies, and they've played Beastie Boys each time.
What did they do in the second movie?
When he was sleeping with those creatures with the tails, those girls with the tails, Kirk.
But if Kirk was a fan of the Beastie Boys since he's a kid, he'd still listen to them.
Yeah, but he could be listening to something else. I was thinking maybe they're like the Bill and Ted of the Star Trek universe.
Well, I don't know. I just excellent always found the Beastie together Boys trying to... kind of pulled me out of the movie a little bit, but you know, I still enjoyed it, so that's a small quirk compared to problems other people have with the JJ verse. But I'm surprised it's not doing better.
Yeah, they said 4 was in the works. I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah, and they said that Chris Hemsworth was returning as Kirk's father for that one, that he was already cast and all that, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, fourth movie's a little too soon to do another time travel thing.
Well, they're also, you know, doing the whole, you know, the TV show is back in the Alphaverse. Like, the originals, it takes place in the original series timeline and right before the original series.
Oh, God, I hate the look of that new ship.
All right, I did have one problem as a Trekkie with something they said in this movie. They called it the Warp 4 prototype, but it came place after the Enterprise, which was the Warp 5 prototype. Just got to get that out there. That bugged me. Sorry.
Hmm. Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Did you guys want to get deeper into it? I know, you know, both you, Ron and Taylor, like,
you guys are right that they did something wrong with, I don't know, the way that they advertised or something, because I didn't see it till, like, I don't know, a week later, a week and a half later, and I see every movie I care about, like, midnight.
Yeah. You know,
day of, and I waited a good week and a half, and it was kind of just like, I do want to see Star Trek still. I guess I'll go, you know, on this one Tuesday I have off, I'll just walk down to the movie theater and go check it out. But, like, I wasn't biting at the bit to see it. I was just kind of like, well, yeah, I'll see it when I see it. Yeah, I mean, that's a problem, right?
So, I mean, overall, did you like it?
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. Like, it was enjoyable. I don't know, I didn't really care for anything. I liked the movie more when they were all together, but once they were, like, kind of all different places on the planet, I was kind of like, well, there's a lot of Scotty happening here.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like Simon Pegg and don't like Scotty, but I was like, there's a lot. Like, it's so focused on Scotty. And it was nice to see Chekhov getting his own. It was kind of like this movie was trying to, like, you know, give the other characters some screen time. And that was fine. But, like, you know, I don't know. I was just kind of like, eh. I think Chris Pine is looking weirder and weirder as he gets older. Like, to me, I don't know. Like, you know, seeing him in Wonder Woman, I'm like, I don't know. Is he the attractive leading man that he was, like, 10 years ago? I don't know. Which is, I guess, a weird thing to say. But I feel like maybe he got some Botox or something. He just looks weird to me.
I haven't noticed it.
Bones is great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's still the best part of these. I think Zachary Quinto is...
He's a great Spock, too.
Yeah, they're definitely... And their relationship...
In this movie was fun.
Yeah, it was exactly what it should be. I put it in between the two other Trek movies. It's definitely nowhere near as good as the first one, but it's still much better than Into Darkness, which I really had a lot more problems with Into Darkness than a lot of people. I think it's the exact wrong level of fan service that they did there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they were just trying to tease with, like, oh, we're trying to do a new story. No, we're not. Yes, we are. No, we're not. It just didn't feel right the whole time.
Yeah, I'm going to say I actually like this the least out of all the Star Trek movies. And I don't know if it was just the way I was feeling when I saw it. I saw it early in the morning. I started dozing off, too. I was getting bored at some points. But in regards to the box office, I think one of the problems, too, is that it's not Star Wars. And I think the audiences have been spoiled by Star Wars now. And they want to see more Star Wars. And they know there's a differential between the two franchises. I mean, when you look at it now, like, what are the most profitable movies? Disney's very fortunate. I mean, they have Star Wars and they have Marvel movies that are doing really well.
That's not fortunate. Those were smart buys.
Yeah. And the other things that they're doing well, too, are, like, the reimagining of their animated movies into live-action movies, too. But I can't think of, like, any other movies that have been doing well. Like, Independence Day bombed, and, you know, some of the blockbusters that we were expecting to do really well just kind of fizzled out.
None of them have been, like, Disney has been putting some sort of quality controls in there that I don't think anybody else is doing. I think they're so in... because they bought these franchises, so they have that $4 billion price tag sitting over their heads.
Yeah.
That they put someone who knows the product in charge. Star Trek, you know, I just decided to look up the numbers. None of them have ever done very good overseas at all, from what I'm seeing here. Even the first one was 33%
really?
Overseas. Into Darkness. Into Darkness did more foreign than it did U.S. But let's see, like... The Voyage Home was the highest grosser. It doesn't go back to international that far, and it wasn't as big a deal back then. But let's say First Contact, yeah, did about 37% of its business overseas. Star Trek's just not one of those franchises that's transferred, and I think it's because it's a TV show. Our style of TV is very different from the rest of the world's. Like, even English-speaking countries, unless it's like a daily soap opera, 26 episodes a season is like, what? You want me to follow that for that long?
But back in the day when Star Trek was on, there wasn't much to watch. And I think, like, so many people fell in love with that show, and they grew older and shared it with their children. And
every iteration's been so unique.
Yeah.
I mean, Next Gen was supposed to be the closest to the original series, but it was less cowboy diplomacy and more just diplomacy. And then Deep Space Nine became like a war drama, you know, and then Enterprise and Voyager weren't. I think part of the problem is they were never sure what they wanted to be.
I think they were all good series, though. I mean, and they were very different, too. Like, again, the Next Generation, like you were saying, like, what did that take place, like, 100 years after the original series?
Yeah, the original series supposed to have started 300 years after the show aired, so it would have been 2266. And then Next Gen started 100 years after that.
Yeah, and I love the crew of the Next Generation. I thought they were good. And when it first was announced, I thought it was kind of funny that the captain normally would not leave the vessel, and that Riker was going to be the one to go on most of the missions and lead them. And that didn't sit well with me. But it definitely grew on me, like, right away. I kind of liked it. Lasted for much more seasons than the original series did. And like you said, Deep Space Nine was another. It was different. It was different from, you know, what we were used to, where it was a spaceport, and I didn't watch it that much. But like you said, it was more of a war type.
Yeah, it took 2 years to get its footing when they got to the beginnings of this conflict with this other power that was just overwhelming to them. And it turned out, and all these series, the different, like, they're about characters. They're not about, you know, they're not about these giant set pieces.
Yeah.
Like, and that's why I like Deep Space Nine the best, is because it wasn't just they developed the seven, you know, core crew members. Deep Space Nine had a cast of probably 20 characters that got development over the course of its run. And
you really got to know them.
Right. And you got to know people, like, oh, there was a background character, they thought it was interesting, bring him back. Voyager started that way, then they only focused on like three or four characters, like the Doctor, the Captain, Chakotay, and Seven. Like, Paris started getting neglected, Ensign Kim got neglected, the Vulcan wasn't that, I can't even remember his name right now, wasn't that interesting. So they just,
Tuvok,
right, they just didn't develop them at all. And then by the time you got to Enterprise, it was really the Captain, Trip, T'Pol. Ensign Mayweather might as well have been a cardboard cutout sitting at the helm for all the screen time he really got as any kind of development. And that's why I think that show never caught on, was because they went away from having everybody be so well developed.
So who knows, like, with this new series on CBS, I mean, maybe they will focus more on the television series, especially now that Beyond didn't do that well box office wise. But I was going to say, like, my impression with Star Trek Beyond was, I mean, I love the crew. I've loved them, like, from the very beginning. And I didn't think it was possible because I was so used to the original crew. William Shatner as Captain Kirk, I couldn't imagine anyone else doing him. And Chris Pine, really, he didn't do an imitation of William Shatner. He kind of made it his own, which I appreciated.
He had the attitude.
Yeah, he had the attitude. But, you know, he wasn't talking like this. You know, he was just Chris Pine. You know, and like, Zachary Quinto played Spock. He kind of was being Spock from the original series. But I love all of them. I thought they were all done well. Simon Pegg, Scotty, and, you know, what's her name? The girl that plays a horror.
Zoe Saladin?
Yeah, she was great too as a horror, and she was so hot too. But with this movie, what I didn't like about it was, I don't know, it just didn't connect with me. I didn't like Taylor was saying, there's a lot of Scotty in it. He wrote it, and I think that had a lot of influence, and he probably wrote a lot of him in it. And I noticed that right off the bat, too. I was like, yeah, you know, you put a little too much of you in this movie. I just didn't like that they were all separated, too. And it's kind of like, well, we need to give time for each character. We'll pair them all up so that they all have their time and stuff like that. I think it should be the core three. It should be Kirk, Spock, and Bones, you know, on a mission if you're going to do something like that. And then the Enterprise crew kind of supporting what they're going through. And I think that that's kind of where it failed a little bit. The villain was a little confusing. I really didn't kind of understand his motive and stuff like that, and actually did spoil that Idris Elba was once human in the trailers, which was kind of dumb. I don't know why they would do that, but yeah, I just didn't do anything for me. That alien girl was kind of cool. She was in the Kingsman Secret Service. She was that Samuel L. Jackson's henchman, the girl with the blades.
Is that who she was? Okay.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool. I thought she did a good job. But
that was a fun movie.
Yeah, I just watched that the other day. I was like looking. I have like 400 Blu-rays, and I'm like, oh, what do I watch? And I was like, I can't go wrong with this movie. I just love this, The Kingsman.
I'm looking forward to the sequel.
Me too. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to bring back Colin Firth, but he's.
Yeah, that's not a spoiler in any way. That's the freaking poster.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm totally looking forward to that too. But yeah, I rank this, you know, Star Trek Beyond as my least favorite of the new series. And I could have had the fact that we had a new director. That whole motorcycle scene or that dirt bike scene was just weird. It's almost like they threw that in there. I don't even, you know, and the sad part of it too is I don't remember it that well. I don't remember how it ended. Are they going on to a new journey? Like a new 5-year mission, and that's always bad. Is like if you can't really recall how it ended, if it was a good ending or a bad ending.
Right. Give us the like nacelles from the A. At least give us like if you're gonna keep giving us fan service, do that.
But like Ron said, I think that Star Trek IV is in jeopardy. We might not see it, especially what happened with Ghostbusters. I thought that was guaranteed a sequel. You know,
and especially with. Happening with Viacom at the moment. Who knows if that company's going to exist in a year.
Anyway, I still recommend it. You know, I would say definitely use, you know, have it as a rental when it comes out. Should be coming out definitely by the end of this year. Star Trek Beyond, and I know, I have a feeling Jack will probably get it. And
I will. It's on my buy list. I enjoyed it that much.
Not sure about Taylor and Ron.
I have everything else Star Trek.
Yeah, it has to go with the other ones on my shelf.
Yeah. I just rebought Blu-rays for the original series in Next Gen. I'm hoping they finally do a Deep Space Nine Blu-ray set at some point soon.
Oh, that would be nice. Yeah, the DVDs look a little blurry.
Oh, I mean, part of the reason I just upgraded to the Blu-ray on the Next Gen was it cut down, like, it took up a whole shelf on the DVD rack, and now it takes up, like, 2/7 of the original space.
Hmm.
Oh, but it's also the restoration on it is beautiful. The colors on it just pop, and the effects just look so much better on the Blu-ray.
Was that ever 16:9 at some point?
No, I don't think anything but Enterprise was 16:9.
Yeah,
maybe some of the later seasons of Voyager, but I think that ended by 03. So
yeah, I have to say the only one of them I don't have is Voyager on DVD or Blu-ray, but the Next Generation restoration looks just terrific.
And there's 3 cuts of Measure of a Man on that DVD on the set. Like, so they actually did like some special features and alternate cuts. So I think it's worth it for a lot of that. Especially since like I think you can get the whole Blu-ray set for like close to $100 if you shop around. That's less than I paid per individual set on DVD.
That was our last story, and we're going to bring this episode to an end. So, Ron, could you tell our listeners where they could find us?
Sure. You could find us on Twitter at NerdAlertPod, and you could email us at NerdAlertPod@gmail.com. I can be found at Gracie's Butler.
And Mr. Taylor Catcher.
Hey, yeah. You could find me at TCatch on Twitter. That's TK4TCH. But actually, I have a new episode of Comic Chat with Gat coming out because Chris Gatley was visiting me in Seattle. So there'll be, after a 3-month hiatus, a new one of those. If you want to check it out, just look for us on YouTube at Comic Chat with Gat. And it's going to be about DC Rebirth, Civil War II, kind of just the most recent stuff.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that, Taylor. I really miss you guys. That was a great show. And I still say I wish you guys would get back together because it's fun. You guys really work well together. I know you're in different states and different sides of the United States, but you guys are pretty good together. And that you're discussing Rebirth and you're discussing Civil War too, that should be a good episode. So, yeah, I recommend if you guys haven't listened to it, check it out. When is it coming out?
It'll be out Wednesday, the whatever this coming Wednesday is. So the 26th, right? It's Wednesday. Wait, it's what day now?
No, 24th.
It'll be out the 24th, August 24th. So, I mean, we did try a distant, long distance one. There is one episode up there when Rebirth and Captain America Hydra Agent came out on the same week. I was like, we got to talk about this. This is big news. And it worked, I think, but there's something about being in the same room with somebody that changes the dynamic, and it was cool to be able to do that again. I might make him do it again at his wedding in December, so.
We'll see. Okay, that's cool.
Quick question for Taylor.
Yeah.
Is DC coming out with a number 2 issue of Rebirth?
No, not as far as we found out. I think Rebirth was launching off this whole thing, and then you're getting pieces of the story and everything else, but really, so far, you've only really got more than like in like Flash Rebirth number 1, Wally, a little bit of Flash, and mostly in Titans though. Like, so
I think we're gonna get the Rebirth story. It's gonna be like next summer's actual event when they figure out what's going on.
That makes a lot of sense. Like right after when the trades are coming out for all these, which is supposedly next March, they're waiting a whole year, so you can't get a trade until next year. So if you want to read any of this, you literally have to find the single issues. That's probably makes a lot of sense.
It's going to be tough. I mean, because like some of these books are every 2 weeks. So
yeah,
like,
it's hard to keep up on this stuff.
Right. I mean, I've read everything but like Harley so far, I think.
And that's just because
it's tough to keep it. Like I had 10 DC books last week.
Yeah, me too. Like it's every time I go to the store, I'm spending $30 because there's that many books to buy.
Yeah, and I'm not. That doesn't even count my Marvel haul. It's been ridiculous lately with Civil War on top of it.
Yeah.
There's nothing really going on with the Rebirth storyline, and honestly, other than just the writing direction changing, other than Superman and Wally, nothing else has really changed.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman is kind of, they're trying to fix the two origins, because right now her book is alternating between a modern day and then a year one, which is a really cool to do. I wonder how they're going to do it in the trades.
Yeah, I agree. That would be, and that would have to be the two parts. It might be two separate trades, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, I just added about 10 minutes onto your podcast.
Well, that's all right. It's still interesting.
It's been good so far overall. I think it's been a much better relaunch.
It's much better than New 52. Like, almost every book is hitting as hard as it possibly can. Like, they you know, they're doing a good job out there. And they even got Scott Snyder back to do his own Batman book, which I'm enjoying All-Star Batman as well.
It's so interesting. It's a different story. I'm really mm-hmm. looking to see where it goes and hopefully talking to him in a couple weeks.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Really? Oh, yeah, New York Comic Con?
Yeah, I've always talked to Snyder a few times because he always remembers me because the first time I was there was a shirt he tried to buy off of me
mm-hmm.
that I was wearing, and we started talking, and we worked at Disney at the same time.
Oh, neat. Yeah, I remember you telling that story. Yeah, so like,
yeah.
He's a super nice guy. Like, he moderated the Greg Capullo panel, which was like a blessing in disguise when I was at San Diego last year. So
yeah, I heard he was angry about something that happened at Boston this year.
Mm.
He did a panel with Capullo, and it was a Batman. But there weren't a lot. Boston doesn't do a lot of panels. They did. They tried to do some more this year, and I don't know if that's what affected it. But I heard from my brother-in-law who was there was like, yeah, something was up with Snyder. He wasn't his normal self. Capullo seemed to calm him down and get into the panel. I don't know if it was that. Or there was a Darwin Cook tribute panel, maybe, that was an issue. I'm not sure, but he was kind of out of sorts at Boston.
All right, just wanted to say thank you again, Jack, for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
So with that, this will be the end of Season 2, Episode 9 of WDWNT Nerd Alert. And until next time...
Good night.
Stay nerdy.
See ya.